secrets to growing big plants.
Light water.
That's really it, everybody. End of episode. Done. Now, let us elaborate. Welcome to Rough Around the Hedges podcast. I'm Kaylin.
And I'm Christine.
And you guessed it. Today, we're going to talk about how to grow big ass plants.
Heck yeah.
Spoiler alert,
Send us $500 and you too can grow big ass plants. No one.
I mean, you send us $500, I'll come out to your house and set it up for you.
That's true.
No, literally, it is as easy as giving them the right amount of water. All right, the right amount. God, I can't talk. Mm-hmm. Giving them the right amount of light and not letting them dry out.
Right.
And now this is specifically to what I grow most, which is aroids. So, mm-hmm. Obviously succulents, lighting is going to be way more important than the amount of water you give them. But as Mackie has said on this podcast, if you give your succulents enough water and they have a well-draining mix, you can water them every day.
Right.
So, honestly, the key is just making sure your plant is not stressed out so it can do what it's meant to do, which is grow. Easy peasy, right? And it's not as easy as it sounds. Okay, so you can absolutely go back and listen to our, in-depth episodes on light and grow lights and watering, which will give you more in-depth insight than we'll give you in this episode. But, mm-hmm. If you've been listening for a while, you know that Kaylin has a problem. And my problem is that I grow big plants, which isn't a problem when they're not all getting big at the same time. Or if you have a lot of room. But as I have expressed, it's sometimes a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And, right now, I have the most windows I've ever had, the most grow lights I've ever had, and definitely not the most plants I've ever had.
Right, right.
I counted, actually, this week. Did I tell you? I told you I have 100 plants,
mm-hmm.
and you I broke have your six band. That are getting propagated that will count as plants down the road. And then I have some propagations that I won't be keeping, but those don't actually count towards my plant total, so... Was it last year or the year before that I got the tent?
You've had it for 2 years.
Shit. Okay. So when I got the tent, part of my agreement with Brandon was that I had to have 100 plants or less.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, fine. If this will allow you to permit me to have a grow tent in the basement, I'll do it. And actually, it's been really great for me and I've stuck to it. I am constantly aware when I have more than 100 plants, which is my kind of situation right now. So I have to make a call, but it's nice. I did swap out some of those old plants for new plants.
Sure.
So I have a couple new ones that I didn't have before last time. But I'm still doing all the fun things. I'm still propagating. I'm still growing from wet sticks. I'm still making new plants from single node cuttings. All the fun stuff is still there. I just have a couple new varieties in the mix. For instance, a variegated golden dragon and a variegated chia pensi.
Oh, right.
And some Florida beauties. And some of them are also reverted Florida beauties. But that's some fun stuff I'm working on,
mm-hmm.
/growing/ having fun with. But yeah, now if we're gonna break down growing big plants, you definitely need to know what the plant wants.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's an aroid, chances are it wants plenty of light and to not dry out. If it's a succulent, it's gonna want even more light and a little bit less water, but it still is not going to want to get stressed out if it doesn't have water. So you do need to actually water them on time. What are the other plants? Ferns. I'm guessing ferns don't ever want to go dry.
No, absolutely not.
And they would like humidity.
Yeah.
But I don't grow ferns. What other plants are there?
That's it. That's the three plants.
Aroids, ferns.
Hoyas.
And succulents.
Yeah.
And treat your hoyas like aroids.
Yes.
Don't treat them like succulents.
Do not treat them like succulents.
Well, you can talk about how to grow your hoyas big.
Yeah. Well, and I think hoya is a special group as far as what we consider big. Because, are we talking leaves are big?
Well, do their leaves eventually stop sizing up?
Or not, depending on the hoya, no. The largest hoya leaf I have seen on my own personal collection was probably about the size of my face. So,
shit.
6 to 8 inches in diameter. And it was around. It's a dinner plate hoya. They get big leaves. That being said, I mean, I don't think I've found anyone that's had a large enough space to grow up a hoya to see how big they can get. You know?
That's a fun project.
That's still kind of in the back of my brain of something to do because trailing back to my moss pole idea.
Mm-hmm. Your vertical
so
spiral moss pole.
Yep. So there it's two side. Are you talking Hoyas that are just massive leaves? Because there's just going to be Hoya varieties that do that.
I mean, like, aroids, you know, generally the higher up they go, the taller they're... I'm saying this wrong. Their leaves size up the more they grow up.
Yeah. But I've seen...
Hoya, some Hoyas might not size up.
I've seen Matilde that have had leaves, like, the size of quarters. And that is huge.
Dang.
For a Matilde. But in the same breath, like, or are we talking Hoya that is very large just because it has that much established vine and growth to it? I.e. my husk. Because, like, husk leaves, they don't get bigger. But the plant itself just continues to get larger.
Yeah, and that's because it's continuing to grow. A different definition of the same. We mean the same thing, but it's a different way of getting there, I guess.
Yeah. Because, and that's, you know, my brain immediately is like, well, that's easy. You just, you know, take care of it. But I know there's people out there that can struggle to even get Hoyas to go past.
How do you get a Hoya to grow? Yeah. Have we done that on an episode yet?
Well, we've talked about Hoya.
My Hoya. We need won't to start grow. Revisiting
some stuff. Yeah. So Hoyas, they don't like to be treated like succulents. And in that same vein, they do like water. They love LECA. They love having support. And they love light. And I would, like, I only have one Hoya not in humidity.
And that's your Polyneuro.
That's my Polyneuro because it doesn't like grow lights. Its sun stress is really ugly and really easily. So I just don't touch it.
But everything else is in humidity.
Everything else is in humidity.
Interesting.
Everything else. I have gotten, and again, I've started to take stuff out of LECA.
Put it in soil.
Because I want to slow them down.
That's right, you were doing this.
Mm-hmm.
God, that's funny, Chris. I know you messaged me one day, you're like, I want my plants to grow slower, so I'm putting them back in soil. And I was like, what? But, like, also I understand. If you have listened to this podcast, you know I have a giant Regal Shield, you know I have a giant Tycon, you know I had a giant elbow. I do have a giant a Moonlight and a Rojo Congo. And I have a couple ficus that are tall trees. Can't stop, won't stop. And then, like, I can only pick a certain number of philodendrons to get big at one time. So, like, right now, my Maoi has a good spot in the south-facing window where I'm going to let him get 8 feet tall and do his thing. But, like, most of the time I end up, like, starting over because I'm like, you're just too big. But seriously, guys, the most light you can give them feasibly, natural light-wise, stick them in your south windows. Don't use curtains. Don't use blinds. My stuff is acclimated. I don't have sheer curtains. I don't have blinds. It's my south windows and then the plant.
Yep.
And, like, sure, they might burn the first time you put them there. But, like, honestly, generally, even if you're bringing it home from a nursery and you're putting it in your window, it's probably not going to burn.
Right.
If you bring it home from a big box store and put it in a low light spot in your home for 6 months and then stick it in your south window, sure, that'll probably burn.
Mm.
You can always acclimate stuff. And acclimating is simple. You just show it a little bit more light every week until you're in the full sun south window with no covering or anything blocking the sun from the plant other than the window glass. Totally doable. I haven't had an issue in years now. But, like, natural light, you want the plant to get the most light as possible. So stick the plant in the middle of the window. Don't put it on the edge of the window. Don't put it a foot back from the window. You want it right up in the window's business. No curtains, no blinds.
Yep.
South windows are best. West windows are kind of next in line. Oh, man, if you have a southwest window, that is the gem right there. East windows are better than north windows. North windows aren't getting any direct light, so you're going to only want to put
nothing.
Your low light babies there. And that's... When I say low light, I don't mean plants that like low light. There's no plant that likes low light, except maybe philodendron. Or no, Begonia immense. North window is where you put your least favorite plant.
That's kind of how I see it. Don't expect large plants in north window.
Unless you're a Begonia immense.
Yes.
You saw that? That blew my mind.
That's one plant.
The one plant exception to our rule
is
Begonia rincinifolia.
And I would immense. Even argue, would you put a Cupria in a north window?
No.
Yeah.
Not enough light. I could try it. I have two in the cat. I have two. I have two. We could try it. Funny story about the Begonia immense. I had propagated it from two cuttings. I had a plant. It was rooted in, like, a 4-inch pot. It didn't super like the south window, and maybe that's because I just... It should have liked the south window. I don't know why that was. Mm. But I moved it to like a northwest-facing window, and it was like, eh. And then I was like, okay, buddy, I don't have anywhere else to put you. I'm putting you in this north-facing window in a macrame on my curtain rod. And all of a sudden, he like started doing things. Mm. Started growing. I had to up-pot him. And then I was like, okay, well, clearly you like it here. So I left him there. Until he was in like a 14-inch pot.
Right.
I had to have Brandon make him a custom plant stand because he just kept sizing up. And it made no sense to me. It's a north-facing window. I don't understand. Like, I think some of the light might have bounced off the white greenhouse.
Oh,
back
sure.
into the window.
Sure.
There's no other thing I can think of. But he was huge and massive. Insane. And also, maybe begonias have a thing where if they're not getting enough light, they put up bigger leaves to catch more light. Maybe. Either way, he was dense was amazing. And I do think if you check out the Discord and just do a search for Begonia Immense, you'll find him. But that is the only plant I think that would ever be happy, truly happy in a north-facing window. So that being said, north is your least good window.
Yeah.
But also, like, you have to be mindful of any buildings or trees obstructing your windows from the outside. So if you have a tree out there, it's got leaves on it, you're not getting light. You want the plant to be able to see the sun.
Sky, yeah.
To see the sky, to see the sun.
That like, is like if the ideal. Sun isn't in, when you're like setting up your plants in the window and you don't see the sun just because the sun hasn't hit there yet, if you can see the sky, that's a good jumping off point.
Yeah, yeah. The plant needs to see the sky. So he can't be below your windowsill.
Right. Also can't be above.
Can't be
hanging well, plants.
He can't be too high in the window.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like you can have the plant technically still in the window, but like, when you think about where the sun is in the sky and follow that ray into your house, the ray is not hitting the top mm-hmm. of your window.
Mm-hmm.
That's not getting light. You need to put the plant at sill level or slightly below and think about the direction of that ray coming into your house.
Right.
It seems obvious once you've thought about it, but so many people miss this.
And I was going to say, and something I wasn't obvious to me and I've learned is that doesn't mean the pot needs to be sill level.
It's the like, foliage.
The pot can be on the floor by all means. And then as long as leaves are at sill level.
Yep. Like if you have a fiddly fig and it's got a trunk and it's got a pot, put that pot on the floor if its leaves are in the window.
Yes.
And its leaves can see the sky. It's not too high.
And then we play a little bit of a game of do all of the leaves need to see the sky or...
Just the top.
As the plant's getting larger and it's getting, its leaves are solar panels, right? So as it's making larger solar panels, as long as those are seeing the sky, it should, asterisk, be enough to keep the entire plant happy.
Well, you think about plants on the floor of the forest.
Yep.
The light is coming in from top. The top of the, like the very top of the plant is seeing that light, but those top leaves are obscuring the leaves below it.
Mm-hmm.
So like those leaves are not getting side light from anywhere.
Right.
So, you know, generally the plant will hold on to all its leaves, but like it's kind of the top new ones that are really doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
I have my Albo, so I chopped it. It has like 6 leaves now. When I put all my plants inside for the fall, they're all in the window, but they're all more or less below the windowsill level
mm-hmm.
because of the sun ray and the lights. And so, like, my Albo, if you were to see where the windowsill is, I would say 50% of the plant is above the windowsill and the other leaves are all below the height of the windowsill.
Right.
But the way the sun's going to come in and hit the leaves of the plant, where it's sitting is actually okay.
Yeah.
So, like, there's probably maybe 2 leaves that don't see any of the sun because they're obstructed. But, like, that thing is going to grow up.
Yeah, I think...
He's going to put out new leaves. He's going to be just fine. But, like, I'm trying to maximize the space I do have for him.
I'm actually excited because I think my Tycon's currently putting out a leaf. And I think, depending on how large this one is and how long the petiole is, it'll be finally tall enough for me to be able to, like, throw the whole thing on the ground.
Ooh, yeah.
Instead of being on a stand.
Yeah. And I know before I cut my Albo, like, he was definitely pot on the ground of the house. The house floor, the living room floor. And there were like, you know, 7, 6, 5 leaves at the very bottom of the plant that were way, like, substantially below the windowsill that weren't getting any light. But guess what? He was tall enough that he was getting light elsewhere. So,
right.
Like, that was all good. But He was in the window. He was seeing the sky. He was getting that direct sun.
Right. And that happens with Hoya, too. Like, if your Hoya is long, big enough that you've wrapped it a few times around a chalice, say, or...
Yeah, some of those leaves are obscured by other vines.
Not getting any light whatsoever.
Especially the ones on the bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they hold on to them.
I will take this moment to note that the sides of windows are bad and the corners, any corner in your house, unless you have some kind of magical window in that corner, that corner is not getting any light no matter what you think about ambient light.
Put a light in there.
Put a hanging pendant style light in that corner if you want to put a plant there.
Yeah.
Nowhere will a light ray come from the sun enter your window and take a sharp right or left to hit the corners of that window and or travel into a corner. That's not how rays work. You really do have to think about going back to school when the definition of a ray is, you know, it starts at a fixed point and then it travels in one direction indefinitely. Right. And in this case, it travels until it hits something that obstructs it. So, like, you know, it goes through the window, it hits your floor, or it hits the foliage of a plant. And that's where the ray stops. Rays do not bend. They do not turn. So when you're thinking about light, think about rays.
Straight lines.
Straight, absolute straight lines. So straight, like, lines. If your house or apartment or whatever, if the building is built at an angle and it's not like a straight north, south, or east, west alignment, sometimes when the light comes through the window, yes, it will come at an angle and directly come into like the side of your window.
Mm-hmm.
But you can visually see that. Right. You can visually see where the sun is and you can visually see where those rays hit on a sunny day. So if that is your case, you can see that and make adjustments. So like, I'm not saying, you know, the corner, like, you know, the edges of windows are always bad. I'm just saying for the most part, that's not where you want to put your plant.
Right.
If you're at an angle, that is the exception and you can see where the light ray actually hits and then adjust based on that. But generally, like, if your plant is off to the side of a window, guess what? No light.
Right.
Ambient light is a thing that our eyes can see. It's not a thing that plants get to use.
Right.
Because they need that direct ray hit.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need... Oh, man. Yeah. If you have a light meter or if you want to download a light meter app, you can actually measure this for yourself, which is super helpful and a learning opportunity. So I totally recommend it. And also, prove me wrong. I dare you. God, that was sassy.
You won't.
This is how I learned too. It blew my mind the first time because I had listened to Growing Joy podcast with Maria talking to Leslie Halleck about light, and one of the homework assignments was download this light meter app and go around your house and measure light. And I was measuring where all my plants were, and all six of them weren't getting any light because I didn't have them in a window.
Mm-hmm.
I had them in cool spots in my house. And like, it was eye opening for me. And I was like, even one of them, I was like, well, let's put this plant closer to the window. And it was closer to the window, but it was off to the side of the window where it got no light. So like, that doesn't do me any good.
Right.
But because I had that free light meter app and I was measuring, like, I could see that. And then I made adjustments accordingly. So like, game changer. If you struggle with light, totally do this. If you want to prove me wrong and say there's definitely light in this corner of my place where I have this fiddly fig, do it. Download it. Measure it. Check it out. Let me know. Please do.
Okay. So light.
Light's huge. And understanding light is part of it, right? Okay. But it is in combination with correct watering practices. Mm-hmm.
And this is, I would argue, the hardest part.
I think light is harder, but, you know.
But you can say you're, you know, blessed with a south window. That's real easy. Okay, I'm going to throw my plant south window. It's going to get plenty of light.
Or you have tons of grow lights.
Right. Now we have to figure out watering.
Yeah. Again, if your plant is stressed, it's not going to be doing its best. But if it's not stressed, because it doesn't have to worry where its water is coming from.
Here's where we tangent. ZZs.
They want a lot of water. They're thirsty.
Here's the thing.
If they're getting tons of light, they want tons of water.
Here's my theory on ZZs. They have the rhizomes. They're like camels. They have the rhizomes to be able to go through periods of drought. But if they don't have to go through periods of drought, they're going to keep growing. When they're struggling and they're going through a period of drought, they're focused on surviving. When they have plenty of water and plenty of light, they are going to focus on growing.
Have you seen my ZZ lately?
Exactly. Yeah. So water your ZZs.
That thing is so thirsty.
I water mine with all of my plants.
It's a huge pot. I have a giant Raven ZZ, you guys. It's in a huge pot. It needs watering, oh man, just as often as a philodendron that's not quite happy in a tall 4-inch pot.
Right.
Or a tall 6-inch pot.
I just water mine with the rest of my plants.
Yeah. Definitely give your ZZ plant a normal amount of light. Don't give it that low light BS. Water it before the soil goes completely dry and you will see a whole different plant.
Right.
Seriously. It's fantastic how fast that thing grows. Mine is putting out, I think, and I didn't check the whole plant,
mm-hmm.
but from what I can see from the couch, it's putting out 4 new leaves right now.
Right.
At one time. A ZZ plant.
Right.
This thing already has a ton of leaves as it is, and they're huge. Such a satisfying plant. More light, more water. Even though it says low light and it can tolerate drought, it doesn't want to.
Right. Just because it can doesn't mean it
right.
should be doing it. And
snake plants, same thing. You keep your snake plant well lit, well watered, those things will grow quick.
Right. And that's with Hoya too. Like everyone's like, treat Hoya like succulents. Okay. Just because they can doesn't mean they should.
Yeah. So they're not happy that way.
Keep them wet. Sorry. Taking that back. Don't keep them wet.
Keep them moist in a well-draining mix.
Yes. Water them.
Yeah. When I first got into plants, I had plant study guides for each plant I bought.
Mm-hmm.
And Christine makes fun of me because I like to make study guides. I did it in college. I do it now. So I had a binder. I would fill out my little plant care. We haven't
done trivia in so long.
You know, we haven't.
We haven't.
That's off topic. For you, for once, it's you and not me.
Yeah.
I had the study guide where I'd write down what the plant wants for light, what it wants for watering, how to propagate it, fertilizer, other, you know, interesting tidbits that would help me care for this plant. And then I kept it all in a 3-ring binder. So I still have it.
Yeah.
I did stop adding to it once I realized most of my plant care is the exact same.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially it comes down to they all want, quote, bright and direct light. And they want to be watered when the top 2 inches of soil dries out.
Mm-hmm.
And I am a rule follower. I am like type A, if it's a rule, I'm following it, type of personality. So like learning how to do plants and like having this knowledge, that was kind of like my Bible. And so I would do the thing where I would check my soil. If it was dry down 2 inches, I'm watering it. And then, of course, you water deeply. So that the whole potting substrate is soaked, as opposed to like, here's a cup today and I'll give you a cup tomorrow. No, you soak the whole thing.
One ice cube.
God, don't do ice cubes. And then I stuck to the, you know, dry down 1 inch, dry down 2 inches. And like now that I mixed my own soil, it's nothing fancy. It's mostly potting. Okay, it's not potting mix anymore. I switched. I do Christine's thing now. Coco coir and perlite, and sometimes I'll throw in cocoa croutons.
Is that working well for you?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Okay.
The cocoa coir is very airy.
Yes.
I like that. However, I still feel like I have to water more.
Oh, really?
Which is weird because I feel like cocoa coir holds more moisture than peat,
mm-hmm.
especially since the cocoa coir won't become hydrophobic and refuse to soak up any more water.
And that might be the thing. You just won't. You may have to water as often, but you'll notice that if you miss a watering schedule, it's not going to make your soil hydrophobic.
Yeah.
It's not going to like rock on you like peat does.
And so far, there's a little transition period where I'm like having to like adjust myself.
Mm.
Like it's also interesting how like the top of the soil gets noticeably dry and then I'm like, oh shit, I got to water the plant.
But when you look at the bottom, it's still wet.
Well, my pots are so big that no, I don't have to water,
right?
But I do anyway. So yeah. I would say if anything, my plants are more well hydrated than they were before,
right?
That's
where the nursery pots are nice for me, because like going back to my ZZ, because it's in a 12-inch pot right now, I think. But like, yes, like you're saying, the top will be dry, but it's nice having them in nursery pots because I can see the bottom and I'm like, oh, that is wet still, so I'm gonna leave you alone.
Is it a clear pot?
No, it's just a black pot, but it's got holes in the bottom. And like with it being a 12-inch pot, it's got like the larger drainage holes on them. Okay. So I can see pretty well into it.
Gotcha.
And I can be like, that is well, still
like
very
if
wet.
You lift it up, you can feel like it's still got some heft to it. So it doesn't need to be watered.
Right.
See, that's the case like in my tent,
mm-hmm.
but my tent dries out so quick because it's warm in there and things are getting plenty of light, that I just water it anyway. Oops. But hey, guess what? They're happy because mm-hmm. they don't have to worry about where their next watering is coming from.
We're talking as if, you know, keeping stuff I'm trying to say this the right way. We find success in keeping stuff moist all the time. But really what it comes down to is being consistent, right? So yeah, we're going to suggest maybe not drying your stuff out all the way.
Yeah, don't let it dry out all the way, but you can let it dry out like half of the way.
But also if you have a plant that is starting to do really well for you and you are like, if it's used to something and it's doing well, don't just all of a sudden like completely change everything.
If it's used to getting dry, you could give it root rot if you immediately switch over to what
we're
telling you.
Don't listen to us and go, oh, well, to size it up, I need to do this. No, if it's doing well, it's sizing up and it's, you know, you're being consistent. That's the thing, is if you're being consistent, that's what's going to get you a good plant.
Yeah. And like for me, the consistency was, you know, I wasn't moving it around because I put it in its spot in the window and I leave it there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm watering when the soil gets dry down 2 inches. And like, for the most part, you know, like I check the plants once a week. If they need to be watered, I water them. And if they're getting close, I used to write them on a list and come back and water them in like 2 to 3 days. And now I either water them or I don't. Like, I will check on them. And if you're close, you're getting watered. If you're not close, you won't get watered. But I usually err on the side of just watering you.
Right.
Because stuff dries out so much faster in my house because they're getting so much light. But like, you know, bringing a plant home from a nursery and then immediately doing this regimen has been very successful for me. And also like another thing which some of you may you realize that, oh, God, I do this. And some of you might be like, oh, I definitely don't do that. Don't disturb them.
Oh,
don't repot all the time. Don't repot unless the plant needs it or if there's a legit reason.
Yeah, like, whoever started that trend of like,
yeah, like, oh, you should repot it, it'll do better. No, let it acclimate, let it start growing, and then you can repot it when the plant says it needs to be repotted. There's no reason to repot all the time. And like my happiest plants, I do not disturb them. They will tell me when they need to be repotted because they're either drying out too fast or they're busting out of their pots, or both.
Yep.
And that's when I repot them.
Yep.
Like, okay, I understand if you have a pest thing and you have to change the soil, sure, fine. But like, for me, no. I have too many plants and they're too big to repot them for fun all the time.
Yep.
But like, because I'm not disturbing them, I am not messing them up, and they don't have to sit there and acclimate afterwards. So like, you know, the whole year my plant, after I've repotted it, sits in the whole plant, or sits in the whole pot for a whole year. I'm not bothering it. I'm not often changing its light, except for when I kick it outside or move it back inside.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, they bounce back. They bounce back really quick. And then I'm keeping their water consistent. I'm doing the same thing each time. I'm not, you know, okay, I have root rotted some stuff, so it's not like I'm perfect, but for the most part, you know, nothing's getting too wet and staying too wet. Sometimes they do get a little dry and stay a little dry. Oops, yeah. I'm sorry. I'll do better next time. But like, that's kind of where I found the most success. Tons of light, watering on a schedule so that the plant is not stressed out. And then all of a sudden they're just like, they're happy to do your bidding. They're happy to grow. They're happy to put out new leaves. You know, they're putting out leaves once a month for like my fancy monsteras, philodendrons even more than that. Man, pothos even faster than that too.
Hoya, it's constant.
Yeah, right?
I never stop.
I'm getting better at Hoya. I have upped their light.
Ooh, do we want to broach cutting?
That is important, but it's not the sole secret. We can mention it. Yeah. Depending on the plant, you can grow a bigger plant by cutting it back regularly. Christine is a big advocate of cutting your Hoyas back regularly.
Oh, yeah. Because
it will encourage them to branch and get bushier, put out more growth points, and then just be a fuller plant in general.
Yep. You can grow a massive Hoya just from one node.
Yeah. You just have to, you know, cut it back regularly.
Yeah.
And then it'll pop out more new vines and stuff.
Yep.
Something like a vining philodendron, not necessarily going to get you there that quick. I would say growing a big plant with a vining philodendron, your best bet is to take cuttings, put 4 to 6 of them in a pot, and grow them all together. But then you're going to get more than you bargained for. I've been there. It gets big fast once they all start growing. But hey, if that's what you're going for, fuck yeah. Hoyas are great because you can just keep wrapping around their little circle trellis. Pothos is another one that you cut it back regularly. It'll branch out and vine more and be bushier. So that's a good one to regularly like take trims of and whatnot. String of hearts and other string ofs, they're the same.
Mm-hmm.
Cutting them back will encourage them to branch out and get bushier and fuller. There's also like a bonus secret with the string of hearts if you want that to get big, is to do a butterfly propagation.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially you're just going to start your whole entire plant over via the butterfly propagation method, where you're taking single node cuts that you then lay on top of your substrate, keep it moist and humid. They will root and then eventually all start growing. But each of those single nodes that you put down on that substrate turn into a vine.
Mm-hmm.
So
Or two or three if it's...
I'm a crazy person and I put a bunch of nodes in the same pot and grow them up. And then once they're starting to get a little long, I trim back right away so that they will branch out just a little bit more, and then you just let it go crazy,
right?
And then all of a sudden you have this insanely full string of whatever plant. You're like, oh,
don't know what to do with.
Exactly. Yeah. But they don't sell them to you like that in the store.
No.
So you have to do it yourself. You know, if you're going to propagate yourself like a pothos, put 6 to 8 cuttings in a single pot. Do single node cuttings, pot them up together.
Unless, and this is going to kind of bleed into another tip for growing bigger plants, i.e. supports. Because if you're gonna do the thing like Adam, previous co-host, is doing with pothos, where he's growing them up moss poles and making massive like pothos and epipenem, like you don't want to put 6 of those in a pot.
You could. That goes along with my vining philodendron thing. Like, yeah, if you try to grow a glad hands with 6 to 8 cuttings in a pot, you're going to get what you asked for.
Right.
It's going to be big. It's going to look great.
It's going to be big.
It's going to be big. So, like, again, if you're prepared for that, great. If you're trying to grow a specimen plant, great. If you're Kaylin and you thought this was a good idea, and all of a sudden now you have no room for any of these,
I was gonna say that
giant philodendrons that you've put together, sucks to be you.
Say part of that is be prepared to be able to give light to it at all sides.
You don't have to give it light on all sides.
But like, and if you can doing rotate 6, it. Well, yeah.
Okay, so you grow 6 of those vining philodendrons in one pot. They are all going to grow at different speeds.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get the one who's super happy to be there, who's going to outshine everybody else. And then you're going to have a couple sad guys who are smaller than everyone else because they're not getting as nice a light.
Mm-hmm.
That is just a given. So they're not all going to grow at the same speed. They're not all going to be amazing. The bigger ones will outshine the smaller ones. But what is nice is eventually you can cut back the bigger ones and then the smaller ones will get that time space to shine.
Yeah.
So like, you know.
My ficus is like that.
Yeah. And then, you know, if okay, ficus, you want a bigger ficus, you prune that thing, you grow it up tall,
mm-hmm.
and then you cut it back way back, and then it will branch out insanely in an insane number of growth points. I've misproven myself and proven myself on this point, and then Katie has reinforced what I thought. So I tried to do a fiddly fig and I wanted him to branch out and get bushy like right away so then I could let him grow. Ugh. Okay. I would start taking my little terminal cuts. I would take them too soon. Mm-hmm. So like, let's say I would have 3 vines or 3 leaves on a stick. I cut the terminal bud off. So I keep my 3 leaves, but my growth point is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of branching out and giving me multiple growth points, it'll be like, maybe I'll grow 1.
Right.
So like, what was the point of even cutting that?
Right.
If you're only giving me 1 growth point, it's not worth it. But if you grow a ficus out, and it's big, and you cut it, like, let's say you cut 2/3 of it off, and you go back to only having 1/3 of the plant left, that thing is going to branch out so much, and then you get all those growth points. So I did this summer on my Taniki, and it just butted out like crazy. Katie, our listener Katie, she bought my Yellow Gem Altissima, did the same thing after it dropped some leaves going into her care. And she was like, oh my God, it's so full. Yeah. It's insane. These ficus are crazy.
Yeah.
So strategic pruning and cutting back will help. Definitely light, definitely water. Another thing you can do specifically that helps your alocasia, regular fertilizer and regular pH balancing your water.
Yeah.
Seems a little extra, but let me tell you. Alocasia are heavy feeders. They want to consume nutrients in every watering. So if you have an alocasia, The first thing you need to give it is light. The second thing you need to give it is proper watering. The third thing is fertilizer. Mm-hmm. So a fertilizer is not just fertilizer is not going to solve your alocasia problems. You got to get the light right, and then you got to get the watering right. Then you add the fertilizer, and then they'll be happy. I mean, they are happy without it, but they do better with it. And then the fourth thing would be balancing your pH out in your like your water solution with your fertilizer. So another also bonus alocasia secret, just put 8 corms together and grow 8 corms at once.
Or
that's how you get a full alocasia.
Or just cut the plant.
Depends. If it's happy,
yeah,
you can cut it.
Because that's how I got 5 fried eggs.
If it's sad... If it's sad, cutting it is not going to do anything for you.
It's you're going to have a pot of dirt forever.
And it's going to die. So I actually, Christine, in my tent right here, my Cupria was a big trunk.
Mm-hmm.
And so he did the thing where he split off into a couple different plants. So yeah. I cut those off, water rooted them. They're plants of their own now, but I have just the trunk left. And I'm waiting for him to put out like a million different plants.
Yep.
And he is.
Yep,
he is. None of them are even close to making leaves yet because they're all just buds. But yeah, I'm excited for what that looks like.
Yeah.
But yeah, a game changer for alocasia is going to be when you are giving them enough light and watering them so they don't dry out. Yeah. Adding fertilizer and then pH balancing.
Yeah,
it definitely makes a difference.
Going back, because I talked about it or I brought it up, but we didn't talk about it. Supports.
And that, so it, not all plants, some plants, yes.
Yeah, so
Monstera, philodendrons.
Monstera, your vining philodendrons.
Your Hoyas. Ooh, your Hoyas need a trellis. Most Hoyas?
Asterix.
Okay.
Because I trellis my Hoyas to keep them neat and tidy. A lot of people do trailing, and that is one way to get your Hoya to bush out.
Because to let it just trail?
By let them trail, because Hoyas don't like to trail. So if you have... Say pollinator. Pollinator is a great one because I can't remember the actual word. There's a word to it. They once they hit a certain point in gravity, they don't want to grow downwards. So if you don't have them on a trellis where, you know, you can wrap it. And when you wrap a Hoya on a trellis, you always want to have that growing vine still sticking upwards because that's where they want to go naturally. And so if you're doing a trailing instead or a hanging basket, eventually... gravity hits a point and they will stop growing that vine out and they'll instead put a new vine out like at the base of the plant. So you can get a really full Hoya plant by trailing it.
Because it doesn't want to trail, so it'll just pushing pop out more.
That's what my pollinator is doing right now.
Okay.
It just keeps like layering growth points on top of itself.
But the ones that you trellis, because those vines are going around,
they don't necessarily branch out unless
they will keep going.
They will keep going. But when you wrap, you want to make sure it's still pointing upwards.
That was an interesting tip/trick Christine gave me about when I trellis my Hoyas, is to always have the end pointing up. So like if it's not long enough to wrap around the trellis and still have the vine pointing up, I just don't wrap it.
Just leave it. Yep.
So some of them look a little tenderly and crazy, but or, then once they can go most of the way around the trellis and I can swoop that little end back up,
yep.
That's when they get stuck on the trellis.
Or I'll use like leaves as support to like push, to like guide it up. Sometimes it doesn't happen. Sometimes, you know, I did go too far and the vine will stop growing or die off, but then it'll just put out another vine somewhere else and it'll be fine.
That blows my mind that Hoyas grow like that.
Yeah, well, because
it goes against all my other aroid experience.
They are quote unquote epiphyte or epiphytic in that way. So they tend to grow on trees in nature, so they want to go upwards.
You should put a Hoya on a tree in the summer and see what happens. I'm out of trees, but
but yeah, so like Tycon's a great example, or Monstera in general. They're what. I think Mackie said scramblers, like they will grow kind of like crawly, but they're ultimately trying to find something to grab onto. So they like supports, and when they have the support, they're not putting stress on their stem or the vine, and that's allowing for larger leaves because they have something they're growing against. So that's definitely something, and you know. Caitlin and I not argued, but we discussed the benefits or cons to moss poles versus just stakes. Whatever you can do to give them support is going to help them.
And I am actual proof that you don't need a moss pole.
No.
There are people who will tell you if you want that plant to size up, you have to have a moss pole.
Well, and like, I'm proof that you don't need to water your moss poles.
That blows my mind. It's interesting because you have the person who's like, you got to keep your moss poles wet, and moss poles the only thing. And then Christine's like, I have a moss pole, but I don't keep it wet, and I'm experiencing success.
My plants are still attached to them.
And then there's Kaylin, who puts my plants on poles with no moss.
Yeah,
I have insane aerial roots coming out of those stems. Yeah. Like, they want to attach to my pole, but they can't.
Yeah.
And then they're still getting huge. So, yeah. Like, don't let anyone tell you you have to keep your moss pole wet. Or even have a moss pole. You should have a pole.
Something.
Some kind of support. But, like, yeah. It's funny to think back, like, you know, Kaylin 3 years ago or whatever, when I started doing non-moss poles. Where I was like, okay, we're doing this stake I'm not doing moss poles. And then, like, you know, wondering what my success would look like versus somebody who did have a moss pole. And then quickly realizing it don't make a fucking difference.
Right.
So that's kind of crazy. But, you know, also it just goes to show that there are other things more important than having a wet support for your plant to grow on.
Mm-hmm.
Water and light.
Or just support.
Support, period.
Support, like, if you had to choose between having a dry moss pole or nothing.
Dry moss pole. Yep. This is a fun episode. We're just debunking all the
things. I only have, I guess, in my brain, and I know to some people I have very large plants, but when I look at your plants, I don't have large plants. But I guess my two largest right now would be my Billy and my Ty.
Nice. Your Billy's larger than mine.
True. It's putting out a new leaf right now. And it's so funny because the newest leaf is pointing completely away from the window.
Oh, weird plants.
Yeah. It's facing the bedroom. And I'm like, why are you like this? And of course, now it's like, I need to sundial back. And I'm like, why did you even do it to begin with?
My Billy OTA is putting out a new leaf. And I think it's going to be its biggest one yet.
Nice.
I'm so excited. Excited for... after the solstice, when we start getting more light, and then we can really ramp up the plant growth.
Does this year feel really dark to you?
I don't know. I feel hate like this time of year.
I know, but like,
I miss my sun.
I feel like it is like pitch black at 4:30 right now, and we still have a month of it getting darker.
Even darker.
Yeah,
you know, my birthday is on like the, you know, longest day of the year. Which I've never considered before, because I'm always like happy on that day. Not like, oh my god, it's so dark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sorry, the longest darkness of the year.
Yeah, yeah.
My birthday is on the 18th and the solstice is on the 21st. So I'm literally in
the
darkness.
It's just been so overcast, but I feel like it has been such a dark year this year.
Because I have been outside until dark all summer long.
Mm-hmm.
So for it to like be dark at 4, starting to get dark at 4, because I can tell at 4 it's starting to get dark. Yeah. And then having it be dark at 5 here in the Midwest, it's like, I used to have 4 more hours to do stuff outside. I hate this.
Right.
And then, of course, my brain's like, well, I've been inside for 3 hours and it's dark. It's time for bed,
Yeah.
So that would be midnight in the summer.
Yeah, but it's 8 o'clock.
Stupid. It's very funny to me when Christine's like, I have big plants, and then I come over to your house and see your big plants, and I realize I don't have big plants. I'm like, you have big plants, but like,
plant size is
subjective. I have a problem. I have a problem.
I was gonna say, I have big plants, you have giant plants.
It's wild. I really enjoy growing plants.
Mm-hmm.
But they are fucking huge, and it's kind of a problem. But a fun problem. Man, that Tycon though. Jeez. I got to post that picture of Kat standing next to two of them.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys remember Kat, who came on to talk about any bugs, and she did a plant chat with us. Kat came over and helped me hose down some of my plants before I brought them inside for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And I had her stand next to my Tycon and my Regal Shield. And both of them are taller than her. And she's just so dwarfed by the size of these two things, which they live inside. They face the window. Yeah. I don't really get to see them facing me very often.
Right,
so like to have both of them facing me in a picture with a people for scale. Crazy.
With a people for scale.
People for scale.
Yeah. Anything else about growing big plants?
We kind of just touched on like growing big aroids. We didn't really touch on like, you know, a lot of the other stuff that has different care types, but you know, check out what you know, the average of what people say on the internet is and then go with it. But like, you know, plants live outside. They are used to getting sun. So light is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Light is huge. And if you don't quite understand light, go back and listen to our lighting episode. If you have your plant under grow lights, go listen to the grow light episode and make sure you have that thing set up and know exactly what that grow light is giving off. Because like that is the biggest challenge people face. Is using their eyeballs to test light for plants. In reality, you cannot do that. Our eyes dilate and they change, and plants don't see light the way we do. So you can't judge plant light based on what your eyeballs see because you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. And I,
so get that light meter, download that free light meter app on your app store, learn, check it out. Daryl Ching has great resources from his blog, House Plant Journal. Check out our episodes, really understand that light. If you have questions, join the Discord and ask me.
Hmm.
I've actually been kind of coaching Catherine lately because she got a house and is setting up her tent. And she's like, I've listened to your episodes, but I still have questions.
Yeah.
Yes, let me help you. And once you successfully do it, like, you'll have this knowledge and then you can help other people. But like, there is a learning curve to it.
Yes.
And if you guys need help, you can ask. I'll do what I can. I've been doing this obsessively a little too long, so...
I was going to say,
happy to help.
That's definitely another like solid like recap / piece of advice is it's a learning curve. Have reasonable expectations out of your plants. You're not going to bring home, you know, a little 4-inch Tycon and it's not going to give you a 20-inch leaf in 2 leaves. Like it's going to.
In 2 leaves? No.
It's going to take some time. In 16, yes, if you figure it out. Like it's going to take a learning curve. You're not going to, you know, have success immediately.
Ooh, and then, you know, the plant's going to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
The plant's going to tell you if you're doing a good job because its leaves are either going to size up or they're not.
Right.
So you can base what that plant is telling you off, you know, base your, not your success, but like see how you're doing by how the plant is responding.
Right.
Plants, they communicate to us more than you think.
Yeah.
So you just got to learn to speak their language. It's pretty cool.
Plant of the week.
Is it still recording?
Yeah.
It's going very slowly.
Yeah, because it's the WAV file's gotten bigger. So it's, you know.
Okay.
It didn't do the thing. Yeah, it moved.
Barely. Distracted. You asked me about plant of the week and I have no idea.
You got me nervous now. It's not recording. It's recording. Yeah. Jeez. What do I want to do?
Ooh, when was the last time my Brevimosa was plant of the week?
Very long time.
So this is funny. I am going to do my Begonia Brevimosa. But it's not my mother plant.
Mm.
My Begonia brevimosa is going to be my plant of the week in the tall 4-inch pot that I propagated my, quote, new plant. I still haven't sold the mother plant.
Yeah.
It still dries out every 3 days.
Yeah.
But I have this new brevimosa that I propagated just for me. And it's beautiful and it's perfect. And I meant to send you pictures of it the other day when I was looking at it. And I did not. But like it's getting humidity, it's not really drying out, its leaves are getting big and they're just like black and pink. They're so cool. I love them. So plant of the week.
I need to look it up what my plant is. I can't remember the name. I got it from Catherine. It is a Hoya. It's black. Hang on. Sorry, friends. Stand by, please. I have too many pictures in my phone. It's not. Hoya polystacha.
Polystacha.
It's, on the surface level, is just like a regular green-leafed Hoya. But I really... I don't want to like go too far into it. So Hoyas have the ability to change their leaf shape completely based on lighting. And this is one that I have found that when I got it, it was more of a long-leafed Hoya. But as I've given it more light, it has become like a fat-leafed Hoya. It kind of reminds me of my Wilbur Gaye when I had that. Mm-hmm. As far as like leaf shape goes. And it's just been a happy little dude lately. And I like him.
We love a happy little dude.
Yeah, just happy dudes.
I love a happy dude.
Cool.
Wonderful.
Well, thanks everybody for listening in to another episode of Rough Around the Hedges.
Right. Congratulations on to our plants of the week.
Yeah, congratulations to our plants of the week. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram if you want. Join the Discord. Do the things. Engage. We like engagement.
We've been more than happy to sit and chat plants with you guys. So we also love it when you come and chat back with us because that is like... 50% of my plant engagement. Okay. I don't know.
It's also just nice.
It's part of the hobby. It's part of the fun of the hobby is seeing other people's plants, not just your own. And, you know, sharing in your successes is cool.
Yeah.
So cool. Not to get sentimental on you guys.
But we like you.
I hope you like us. Yeah. I think you like us. If you've come back and listened to these episodes, I think you like us too. So cool.
Cool.
Anyway, stay rough, everybody.
Catch you in the next one.
Bye.
Bye-bye.